Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar holding it down on the last day of this beautiful week. Cuthbert playing us in with a major throwback, Gloria. If you're a St. Louis Blues fan, you're just waking up with a massive smile on your face.
Yeah, I don't know how many people from St. Louis are.
Actually,
I don't know what kind of crowd I'm playing
to. Listenership is extremely high.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
I looked at the stats. Tens of thousands.
I wish I looked at the demographics beforehand, but that was more so for you. I was a little bit worried that you weren't going to like pick it up right away.
You don't think I would pick up Gloria? So throwback, Cuthbert and I used to work together at a different media organization.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did that, it was the St. Louis Blues Cup run. And I would blast Gloria the beginning of the shift, the middle of the shift, the end of the shift, and they ended up winning the cup that year. So it was the anthem of the locker room in our office as well.
Yeah, it essentially consumed everything that we did was Gloria.
Fun.
And clearly it was big for the St. Louis Blues too. And I'm not, so I'm on the aux cord and
yes.
I'm not like Blake Murphy level nerdum here. There is a little bit of a theme. So, you know, Gloria being so important to the St. Louis Blues is a little bit of a tease to, you know, what the other songs might be to lead
like
us
that.
In
it's
this
a,
morning.
It's a great tune. So you're back here with us today, JD. Still suffering with the zero voice situation. I actually talked to him yesterday. Well, texted with him. He's actually a big fan of voice notes, which is kind of a nice thing for me because I'm not getting any. It's just just like he's texting like a normal person. He always sends voice notes and I just hate it. But he was in good spirits. He was watching a new Netflix show that my cousin, Humble Brag, is actually in a Netflix show right now. She's a stand-up comedian.
Mm.
So he's a huge stand-up comedian fan, and so to get his like stamp of approval was massive. So he's laying in bed, he's watching Netflix, he's checking out my cousin's Netflix show. It's called Netflix is a Joke Fest. It's with Bill Burr.
Okay.
He's a big deal.
So it is about stand-up comedy then?
It is a stand-up comedy
is it like a
showcase?
Reality show?
No, a showcase of comics.
Okay.
Bill Burr presents Friends Who Kill. Check it out. Her name's Steph Tolov. Anyway, JD was in good spirits because he was watching that and he said that she was good. And that's like a massive win for
Perfect.
Our morale as Bulgarians because he likes to rip on the Bulgarians.
Oh, and she's Bulgarian.
She is. She's from that side of the lineage.
Okay.
We don't have any Bulgarians. You know.
No, so she's in your family? I thought you said she was a friend.
She's my cousin.
She's your cousin. Well, that's very cool.
Yeah. And our other Bulgarian athlete connection plays in net. Didn't get a chance to play last night, but his team... still cooking.
Who's that? Georgiev?
Yeah. You know, I told you he's Bulgarian before. Or at least I've posted about it.
Yeah.
We don't have many claims to fame, okay? We have him. And he's still in the playoffs. And he might win a Stanley Cup.
He very
our
well
country.
Could. His chances took a bit of a hit last night.
That's right.
I'm not sure if the Rangers have a chance if he has to go in net, given how important Igor Shesterkin is.
God, that'd be a bad
and
one.
Will be in Game 6. Of course, the Lightning... taking a 3-2 series lead at mm-hmm. Madison Square Garden with a 3-1 win. Brandon Hagel, shout out to him, by the way, for making sure
that puck line
hit.
That's nice of him.
Like, there's so many examples of why the Tampa Bay Lightning are so brilliant, but the fact that, like, they get an empty net opportunity, and before you can, like, really digest what just happened, the empty net goal is in the back of the net.
They're
like, the Lightning
around.
Just do not mess around. That's perfectly put.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for them to get the puck line for you, you know, that's an extra added bonus. But the goaltending has been, you know, for me, obviously, the storyline of this once again. And it seems like the only way you're going to be able to beat these goaltenders is with some traffic in front of the net. We saw that on both of the Tampa Bay Lightning goals, except for, obviously, the empty netter. It's like just a duel between the two. And I think if the Rangers are going to have any shot in winning this now with the momentum completely in the Tampa Bay Lightning side, is you're going to need to somehow outplay Andrei Vasilevsky. And I don't think that's really possible.
No, I mean, we know his record when mm-hmm. the Lightning are facing elimination, but it's almost, I actually don't know if it's better, but it's as good when they have a chance to move on as well. Like Andrei mm-hmm. Vasilevsky, when there is like a carrot dangling in front of him, be it the opportunity to move on or to stave off elimination, he's always at his best. And he'll have that chance to, you know, prolong that legacy that he's building in this game 6. And I guess it would be diminished slightly if it's a game 7 that's needed, but either way, Vasilevsky's going to have a chance to be the difference and make sure that the Lightning go back to the Stanley Cup final. But you mentioned it like with the, with the screens in front and the way that the Lightning scored goals in game five, like they just, there's a misconception about them, because what we learned about the Tampa Bay Lightning was that year where they won, what, 62 games and scored all those goals and like reimagined what power plays look like with their seam passing and all that. But that's not how they've had their success in the postseason. Like that last night was the quintessential Lightning win. Like it was, you lean on, you're outplayed at times, not for too long, but in the first period, there were some dicey moments, but you lean on Vasilevsky to be the goaltender that he can be, which is basically to stop everything. And then you wait for your moment when traffic forms in front to put two wrist shots, weak wrist shots at that, on net that are either going to deflect off something or go straight in because Igor Shesterkin can't see where the puck is. Like, this is just how they win games. It's not about that high-flying dynamic offense that made a lot of hockey fans fall in love with this team. They are like filling the bucket up for that old school fan that romanticizes doing things the right way. They are so committed to doing things the right way. They do things the right way better than anyone else, and that's why they're one win away from going back to the Stanley Cup final after winning the last two Stanley Cups.
I think a lot of it, in a viewer's standpoint, is I see so much patience with them. Like, they don't get rattled. They have this experience that, obviously, hey, you're back-to-back Stanley Cup winners, that alone. But you've gone deep in the playoffs. You know how to expect more from the depth of your team. You know how to expect your stars to come and provide the boost that you need. They just have that like fortitude when they were down 2-0 in the series. You can't count out a team that has that track record of winning. And I know the first two cup runs, I don't think they had much adverse. Like, I think we were looking at the stats before, like they didn't have many elimination games where they weren't in control. They were the ones driving the series. They're the ones in control of most of the two playoff runs. I'm sure there were some blips there. But this time around, they've had to face this adversity, and they have completely flipped the series upside down. And a lot of that, to me, is the experience, the patience, the understanding of what your team is and what your team can be, and how those guys down the lineup can contribute. So they're looking pretty dangerous, to say the least. And I think that, as much as I always say, hey, it's a 7-game series, if you're the Rangers and you lost last night, which they did, it's got to feel like really out of grasp, in my opinion.
Yeah, because what had been working for them suddenly didn't, right? They had 8 straight victories at Madison Square Garden. They had the better goaltender pretty much at every stop until, or at least when they were at home ice, until this game five. And now that, not that magic, but that recipe is no longer there. And now you have to do what you haven't been able to do, which is go on the road and win a game. Yes, they did that versus the Carolina Hurricanes, but they're facing a better team now in a more difficult place to play. I mean, atmosphere-wise, I'm not really sure how you can compare it, but what makes it more difficult is the fact that the Lightning are the team that has that home ice advantage. I wrote 3 things down in terms of, like, adjectives or like, buzzwords to, like, describe what happened, and you took one of them, being patience. Like, that, the patience is what really shines with this team, and it's something that, like, I don't even know how you develop it, right? I don't know how you are comfortable enough, aside from winning the last 2 Stanley Cups, to play a game like that where you're waiting for your moment and you're not worried about what's going to happen.
I feel like
to
it's a lot of just trust and
it's,
understanding.
It's trust
of your
in
team.
What they do.
It's your patience.
Can you have that without winning 2 Stanley Cups,
no,
though?
I don't think you can. I think you can have flashes of it. I think that has escalated because of the way that they have seen it. Tried and true. That's what I would like. I would put it into the bucket of you have the experience, which gives you the ability to be patient. You know your team can rise to the occasion. You have the stars. I feel like
they know exactly who they are. Like, there's no doubt, right? So if there's no doubt,
they've played enough games in the last 2 years to know that too.
Yeah. So it's really a luxury that they've earned from themselves, but it's just something that no one else has right now. And that's really the difference. And I don't know if they're going to win game 6. I don't know if they'll need game 7 and win that. I don't know how they'll measure up exactly against the Colorado Avalanche yet. But this team is so much more prepared because of what they've been through and what they know about themselves that they can shine and overcome these tenuous moments. And game 5 was tenuous for every second of it until Brendan Hagel scored that goal. Like, it was, it's nerves, it's guts. Like, they just have it all. And again, for the umpteenth time, it was on display.
How about Stamkos fighting?
And that too. Like, we could get, like, we could get archaic and be like, that's the difference between this team and the Leafs. Like, that's not, but that's not really, it's not really it, but they're like, are so, the buy-in is just complete. Mm-hmm. Like, at every turn, they prove that to you. And I guess that was just one of another example of it.
Did you see Jimmy Fallon in the hot dogs?
When did Jimmy Fallon jump the shark? Like, when did he become? Like, a long time ago, right? Like, unfunny a long time ago?
Yeah, I'm just not
a fan. I don't understand why he
was... It was cringe. You know when you have... This is my least favorite feeling. Secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah.
You watch someone do something, and you feel the secondhand embarrassment.
Why does that feel so bad? It is bad.
It feels awful. I watched that video, that viral video of him. If you haven't seen it yet, he... They pay, obviously, there's millions of stars at the MSG last night. And it's just like every commercial break, the camera crew's like, look who I got. Mm-hmm. And they zoom in on Jimmy Fallon, and he's up on the Jumbotron, of course. And he's got a beer and a hot dog. And he's like dipping the hot dog in the beer and then shoving it down his mouth. And then while it's still being consumed, tips the beer back. I thought it was a choke. Like, it was just a disgusting display. And it just gave me so much secondhand embarrassment because then he's like right up in the camera and everyone in the background's like, okay.
So you're going star to star, and he might be one of the biggest stars mm-hmm. that they put the camera on, and yet he does the goofiest, dumbest, silliest thing
like,
that
I
just
guess that's his,
makes people cringe. Like,
that's who he is now?
I guess. I mean, he's still in the air, right? He's still in the air every night, I assume.
Sure.
Relevance is something that he seems to have lost.
I thought that was strange. And then he was trending for all the wrong reasons.
Yes.
So. Anyway, did you have that other word? You had patience? You had...
I think I
blurred them into...
Yeah, guts, nerve, patience, guts, nerve, steady hand.
Steady
like,
hand.
That's just stuff that's that them. They have, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's within.
So they're back on the ice Saturday night in Tampa Bay. We might not be talking about another game after
We're running
that.
Out of hockey games.
I know. I'm kind of hoping... Oh, this is a fun one. I'm kind of hoping that this game goes to 4 or to 7 because I'm just going to pull it up. If the game 7 is played, Justin Bieber is supposed to have a concert at Madison Square Garden on June 14th, which would be...
That's the day of?
The night of game 7.
Mm.
And you know, you're not really changing a concert last minute with hundreds of thousands of people buying tickets, but you're also not going to get, like, who are you catering to? Obviously, the NHL has put this in their calendar, but why does Justin Bieber have a concert also scheduled for the same night?
I don't know why they would put it in the calendar knowing that it was booked.
Right?
But the Biebs just canceled 2 shows. Did
the
he not
Biebs
in Toronto?
The Biebs just canceled 2 shows in Toronto, and it
so
was
So the Biebs has a history
outrageous.
Of canceling
people
shows,
People were
right?
so upset because he's under the weather.
If you have to make up 2 shows in Toronto, I think you can make up 1 show in New York. But I think, like, Madison Square Garden, like, sports take precedent, right?
You would think, hope so. It's game 7.
Yeah, it's game 7. I think it's probably that night because ESPN wants it to be that mm-hmm. night. And if ESPN wants it to be that night, I'm sure that they have a little bit more power and influence than the Biebs, even though the Biebs
know.
Is, I mean, he's pushing new drinks on us.
He's got his hand in everything.
New mini pastries. Like, he's got...
I like the unbranded way that he did that. Mini got, pastries.
I didn't want...
They're circular.
I didn't want to get any cut eyes,
yeah,
so
no,
I made
I like
sure
that.
That the circular, small pastries. Yeah, he's a powerful guy, but I feel like he can't disrupt... A possible game 7, but I don't know if it's going
to
go
something
there.
To keep an eye on.
The Rangers, in order to get that game 7, are going to need a little bit of magic in terms of healing power, though. Because despite Hedl and Strome and Goodrow all being in the lineup, they were kind of reduced to a 2-line team. And that might have been a coaching decision on the part of Gerard Gallant. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they, like, barely played that kid line...
And
that kid
line
had,
has been electric.
And it has been. And it's been like the weapon, right? What you throw out there in these moments where you can make something happen. They just weren't given those opportunities. And I wonder if it's because Hedl can't do what he needs to do being injured, or Gallant just, like, saw those top 2 lines kind of cooking, like, doing pretty well from shift to shift, and kind of got one-track minded. I'm not really sure how that shook down, but I don't think you can beat Tampa Bay Lightning with two lines.
No.
They're going to need their full complement. Well,
that's something that Colorado also has been proving to do, is have some more guys showing up in the postseason. So if that's their opponent, yeah, you're going to have a little bit of a better punch with less, with more than two lines. Speaking of that kid line, we're going to see a kid in the big leagues this weekend. Gabriel Moreno is having his debut, well, you know, not officially, but officially enough that we know, guys, it's happening this upcoming weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays. We talked about this yesterday. Obviously, all day on the station, you could have heard a lot of Gabriel Moreno talk, whether that's Blair and Barker or Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy, who came on. All the articles on sportsnet.ca. If you haven't got enough Gabriel Moreno, we're going to add to that. I was just thinking, Danielle, our producer, was posing some questions about what would constitute a positive debut for Moreno this weekend. There's a lot coming into this, a lot of excitement. It's been a while since we saw such a highly touted young prospect come up the rankings. He gets his you know, his big debut with some injury luck, in a sense. He's, what, number four ranked in the MLB prospect pipeline. But there's also, you know, you don't want to put too much on his young shoulders.
Yeah.
He's been crushing it, but it's now a big step forward.
I like just fitting in.
Fitting in is
like
if you
just like if night one for you goes beyond any reasonable expectation, like, it's great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a moment. It's something fans, the clubhouse, himself would remember forever. But like, just fitting in is more important, where you can just be productive. You can help your team in some way to a victory without maybe being the star of the show on that night. Of course, he'll grab the headlines, but it doesn't have to be because he hit two home runs in his debut.
That'd be
like,
nice.
I just think fitting in and playing a role and starting that learning process is very important. So I think that's what I'd like to see from that debut, the weekend debut. I think the weekend debut is maybe more important because we have to learn about how all these pieces are going to fit into place. I think, as you mentioned, with more and more people in the station talking about it and more being written about it, it's kind of like unclear how this is going to work in both the short term and the long term. And we're going to ask Ben Ennis about that and more as we talk about this Gabriel Moreno's debut more this morning. But in terms of like what he can do immediately, I think it's just fitting in, being part of the team, helping the team win.
Yeah, and I think I'm right on board with that. I don't want to have too many expectations of his production right away, but some things that I do want to see is him looking comfortable. You know, having patience, let's say as a hitter, having patience and quality at-bats and not feeling the pressure of, okay, now I need to, you know, show who I am and I got to hit three bombs or I really got to get on base every time I'm up there. Like, being able to see pitches and have that patience, to me, is something important. And that's a difference probably than what he's feeling at AAA, where he can kind of command all that tension. Mm-hmm. I want to see him feeling comfortable to talk to other catchers in the dugout, to talk to the pitchers, to put himself in the conversation. It can be intimidating to come up and play with players that you know, but you aren't friends with, to really put yourself, hey, I want to be a sponge. I want to absorb all the information I can this weekend. I want to learn, and put that into practice when it's my chance. Those are things for me that would be a positive debut for Gabriel Moreno this weekend. But the biggest question that I have is how they're going to roll this out. We got three games ahead.
Right.
It's in Detroit. We have tonight Berríos pitching. This is all, you know, predicted pitchers. Saturday, Gausman, and Sunday with Stripling. Mm-hmm. So for me, if I'm creating a perfect starting weekend for Gabriel Moreno, you're catching for Stripling. You know, that's the logical move. He's the easiest guy to catch. He's not a massive adjustment from AAA to the majors. He seems like, I don't know, Stripling, but he seems like a guy that's like, you know, nice, good at feedback. And I don't think catching him game one against Berríos, I think that maybe he put him in DH. Maybe you just walk him in there and you give him an offensive chance to get his feet wet. I also think there's no chance in the world that you have him catch Gausman after he's coming off the worst game of his season.
Right.
There's all the conversation around him tipping pitches. Like, he needs to correct himself majorly in that game. Like, if we're talking about things to think of this weekend, it is how does Gausman respond? I just don't feel like that's a comfortable place to put this young rookie catcher in with big, big stakes that this ace guy needs to figure it out.
And more so, you don't want to distract Gausman, right? Like,
no.
He's clearly been, like, you know, a little, maybe a little unsettled this week trying to figure out exactly what just happened. So let him get it back into his rhythm. I don't know if it was reported that he wouldn't play Friday. Like, they would join sometime during the weekend. So I'm not exactly sure if he's going to be around Mourinho, that is, tonight. But it does make sense that maybe he has his catching debut on Sunday, even though that's like a little bit of a delay since there's all this excitement, right?
Maybe you put him in DH Saturday.
I was a little surprised that so many people were saying that DHing is not going to be as much of an option as maybe we thought, because there is this surplus of catchers and everyone needs their plate appearances and everyone needs to
get
behind the plate at some point.
If you're not going to play him. Everyone we talked to was
He's certainly going to play. It's just, I was like, why not?
It seems
DH
weird
every
to,
now and
to
then.
Just
and that's
let
an,
him go
is that
to
an
Sunday.
Easier way to make your MLB debut, or is that a harder way?
I'm not
exactly sure. We'll ask Ben about that. But I feel like the Gausman start, I'm with you there, is maybe off limits.
Oh, I hope so. Actually, Shai Davidi was on Blake's show, and he talked about kind of what he thinks with this call up and what his curiosities are. So we have the audio. We'll play that now.
Essentially, the two key points, right? Is he ready, and what does the opportunity look like? And so, you know, once they get through what the opportunity looks like, and I don't know if this is carved in stone, but, you know, I would think that he's going to be getting, you know, seeing action in at least 50% of the games, not necessarily catching 50%, but seeing action in them. You know, a lot of it is on how is he going to handle the pitching staff, what's his game calling like. And, you know, as much as you can do a lot of that in the minor leagues, you know, ultimately, at a certain point with every prospect, there's going to be some trial by fire. You know, they clearly felt that was he'd met enough of the thresholds to get to the big leagues.
So having that confidence that trial by fire is going to be less impactful to the club, to his step into it this weekend, is a confidence thing. Like, when I felt a little bit surprised that they called him up this quick, the other side of the coin was like, hey, they must think he's so ready for this. So with Shai saying that he might play 50% of the, he's going to see at least 50% of the games.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think maybe tonight he's just around. He's there. I don't know if you put him in right away, but then DH Saturday, catch Sunday, that's a pretty good representation of what you might see moving forward. If that's the way that they want to roll him out for the next 2-3 weeks with Danny Jansen down, there's your chance to kind of give him that weekend of both sides of what he's good at.
Yeah, and I think the speculation of the conversation was that he'd be tethered to two or three pitchers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we mentioned Gausman, that maybe that not being right, but that he would maybe catch Stripling, maybe Manoah's his guy and he gets to work with him. And then maybe it is Kikuchi, but then I guess that would be three in a row. So there's a lot to figure out still. But I think in terms of like what would make a good weekend, a strong debut in terms of calling the game with the starting pitcher or one of the starting pitchers he's going to be working with moving forward, and a little bit more clarity on the role, because again, these pieces don't seem all that easy to lay down on the table.
I will say one of the maybe positive things of having the catchers be in and out is it doesn't seem like pitchers have really solidified that's the guy that always catches for me.
Yep.
So I think that there is a little bit of leeway for him to get some different looks. It's not as solidified as previous years where that's my catcher and there's nobody else is catching me. I think that's kind of a luxury that they've had with people up and down and seeing, you know, three different catchers at times. So I'm very excited to see how they roll it out. I think it'll be fun to see the announcement of him coming up. I'm sure they have something cool planned. Blue Jays social media is very fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they're not just going to make the announcement and say, cool, let's move on. So excited to see that. That's this weekend. Does he play tonight? Does he play Saturday, Sunday? Let us know on the text line, 590-590. You can always hit us up there. Let us know your thoughts on the debut of the young stud. But if we look at the Jays weekend in a whole, there are some things I think to circle in terms of curiosities as well. It's just a team based. For me, it's coming down to the pitching as of late. I was at the Saturday game last week when Berríos had his 13 strikeout game. A little bit of a slow start, but then he has one of his career game. It was really incredible to see his curveball back to being elite pitch. He's having that confidence on the mound. I want to see that again, I want to see how you follow that up. You know, you had the tough first inning, but he has the bounce back. He has the resolve to do that again. So how are you coming back after a 13 strikeout game? Not like there's pressure, but people want to see you build on that. That's a big point of curiosity for me. And we mentioned it with Gausman, obviously. That's got to be the biggest thing for the Blue Jays this weekend, is how you have figured this out or not. Was he tipping pitches? Who cares? Just fix it.
Probably the most important thing. I mean, Mourinho biggest probably just because of
Besides him.
The talk. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of like getting back on track, proving that there's not an issue, that's definitely very, very high on the priority list. But with Berríos, like, you know, we talked about the volatility with Yusei Kikuchi a lot yesterday after that two-thirds of an inning start that he had against the Royals. I think you want to see a little bit more consistency there as well. And the 13 mm-hmm. strikeout games are great, but the flip side of that isn't so great. So a little mm-hmm. bit more down the middle would be great, and
yeah,
starting
in
Detroit
middle.
Would be sure. lovely, right?
Yeah. Certainly. So it looks like he's playing tonight, Gausman Saturday. The only other thing on Gausman that I'll say is that this is like the first adversity we've seen. And there's been each pitcher, I feel like, has had, maybe not Manoah, has had some adversity this season. And it, for me, maybe it's the former athlete, is how do you learn to put that in the past and to approach each game completely different and not let that linger. And I think for starting pitchers, it's probably super hard because you're not getting a lot of reps. Like, you're not out there the next day able to erase your previous mm-hmm. start. So Gausman coming in, it's been, feels like almost a week maybe of him waiting around, probably watching so much video, probably trying to figure out if they were tipping pitches or not. And the other team is also doing that. So you don't, I would assume that Detroit has done enough video work that they know if he was or he wasn't. And my biggest point of curiosity for him is, what if he starts the game and it's not great, right? Like, what if he has a couple bad, you know, outs to begin?
No one's offering at that splitter again.
No. And what do you do? Are you able to have some resolve and say, hey, like, it's okay. Like, I've figured this out. I have that confidence level. It's not a big deal. Or does it crumble?
I think Dan Shulman made a great point when we were talking to him yesterday that, okay, if the Twins picked up on mm-hmm. tipping pitches or the possibility of tipping pitches, that the Jays would be able to figure it out as well. And I think there should be confidence that they'll be able to do that, and that Gausman will be able to pick up on what.
What's your video staff
anything.
For?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they can do it, the Jays should be yeah. able to. But I didn't know much about Kevin Gausman coming into the season, and obviously him signing with the Blue Jays. But like, consummate professional is one of the things that sort of comes mm-hmm. into my mind, and for that reason, you know, it's worth talking about, but maybe not as big of a deal as. Maybe
that.
We've been putting it.
I like that perspective, and I hope you're right. Other things that I do care about, Vladdy.
He's always been Vladdy,
but he's been getting a little hotter, but we need him to be all-star Vladdy. He's not all-star Vladdy yet. It's going to be mid-June. Can you go into Detroit, which is not a hitter-friendly park, find a way to continue the little bit of upwards progression we're seeing with him? I mean, the team is scoring relatively a lot of runs, but I still feel like we're hungry for more Vladimir
Guerrero
Jr.
He's
like
the engine.
We want to see it. I love a little Tapia home run. I love a little Zach Collins home run, but I would love multiple Vladdy home runs. I would like to see him with the confidence, like, we're going to go up there and smash his ball out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, if this team is going to achieve its potential, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. needs to be at or close to his best. And we haven't seen that yet this year. There's a lot of runway on the season. In order for us to see that, I'd love to see him get the home run jacket. I'd love to see him put the home run jacket on Gabriel Moreno.
Oh, wow. What a nice
I'd love
visual.
To see. I mean, you're the vibes coordinator, right? A little bit of vibage mm-hmm. for the Blue Jays would be nice. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being at the center of that would be even better.
Do you love the home run jacket?
I do.
I think it's amazing.
I do. I don't know if it was something like I don't know if those things are like, it sometimes feels a little put on.
Like gimmicky.
But it doesn't feel
that gimmicky. This team's like, I love watching this team.
It fits their energy.
I could just watch a live stream, like a split screen of the game and then of like the dugout. Like, they're just so fun.
It's a good idea.
Rogers, free idea. Split screen of Vladdy, Cam, and the game. I think we could do it. I think they have the technology.
Certainly.
But I think that that's just such a joy as a Blue Jays fan, even when they're, you know, maybe not at their best, they continue to be a positive, youthful team that finds a way through it. And I love watching that. I think it's so much fun. I think that that's kind of a unique thing. I was watching last night the Angels, who finally won a game.
Did they?
They won a game. Huge win. I just, the you know, Shohei Ohtani basically did it himself, which is fine. I did see some people on Twitter being like, you got to trade him and Mike Trout amidst this losing streak. Like, are you guys nuts? You trade like two generational players because you're on a, I mean, your worst losing streak of all time. But anyway, they had a little cowboy hat that they put on, like, you know, go through the dugout when they get, and I didn't like it as much as the home run jacket. And I think they put a little button or a little pin on every home run. Stupid.
Yeah. I mean, some in the NHL too are just like, you know, you're trying to find a new idea every year and it's like really ridiculous, like a big hammer in the dressing room to hold, like just
hammer.
Weird things that like a big chain. I don't know. I feel like it's,
well, there's
it's,
Jocktober it's diverted. Last year, like the massive, like it was like the Flava Flav. I don't know if you saw it. Like,
who was that?
Jock Peterson.
Oh, Jock Peterson.
Like, he had the Jocktober massive necklace. And it was a Flava Flav moment. You remember him?
Jock Peterson knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
Jock Peterson can come up with something at least unique and that is funny and that works because he's got that personality.
Cool.
But at least in the NHL, it's really gotten away from the... Was the hard hat the first thing?
I have played with the hard hat my whole
Everyone
life.
Had a hard hat early on. Right? Yeah. It's because did the Flames have the first hard hat?
I don't know where it originated from.
My
midget hockey team.
Exactly. So
hard
it was
hats,
everyone
okay?
loved the hard hat early, and everyone's trying to find the new thing that could be the hard hat, but nothing works as well as the hard hat, the original.
That's right. The hard worker, you put the team on your back. Sometimes you give it to that fourth liner like myself
exactly.
when you need a little confidence.
Big shot
boost.
Block gets you the hard hat
That's
even
right.
if you didn't score
Huge
the winning goal.
PK. Huge PK.
Who would have got the hard hat for the Lightning last night?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Sergachev obviously had the two big moments, but Perry had the screen. Pilat had the tip. Hagel had the insurance.
Oh,
marker.
Wow. You got to split it into parts.
Vasilevsky obviously was brilliant. Stamkos fighting.
Stamkos fighting.
Does he get it for that?
No. That's really tough.
We can mull it over.
We should mull it over. Yeah. Also, if you're listening and you've played sports at any level, what are your hard hat type gimmicks? And do you like it?
Even if it's like beer league,
yeah.
Do you have something in the dressing room?
Other than like
we used to
beer.
Toss. We used to toss around something, even in beer league.
What was it?
It was like a hard hat.
Come on.
It was.
Could have been more. Oh, you know what? It should have been a hard hat with the two beer connector
yes.
straw things.
Yes.
You know, I'm trying to explain it the best I can, but you have the two.
Tough to keep that in a hockey bag over
what?
Like
no
a week
way.
Long stretch, though.
Oh yeah, the straws. Into the mouth
just
from
like
the beer
moldy
would
by
be
the
disgusting.
End of it comes back,
yeah. You need to sanitize that. But that would actually be a great spin on it. Another free idea this morning. You're just tossing them out. Also, yeah, it's Justin Cuthbert, his aux cord today. We're going to get Blake to put that on the aux cord fan morning show playlist on Spotify. So far, so good. Great debut for you. We got some great guests today. Ben Ennis, Frank Saravelli, who put out his trade targets article yesterday, so spicy hot, interesting.
Couple interesting names on there. We'll go through with them.
Names on the trade docket, possibly, and how that affects the Leafs, of course. And then Grant Hill, NBA Hall of Famer, not a big deal. 7-time All-Star. We're going to have him at 8 o'clock. And then, of course, we're going to end with the Wake and Rake. And I have a very fun Wake and Rake prop thing to propose to you and Blake. I didn't tell them in advance what it was, but a little fun spicy Friday thing for you.
Looking forward to it.
Let's take a break because, you know, the thing that you look forward to the most is next. The A-List. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Friday morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Warfar holding it down on Friday. JD being still under the weather. You can follow Justin at JC Cuthbert on Twitter, and you can find all his stuff at Yahoo Sports Canada. And that is all I have to plug for you, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any autobiographies coming out, like Grant Hill?
No. We're going to talk about an autobiography later with Grant Hill, but not yet. You got yours in the works?
I wonder if I would ever write an autobiography. I don't think I would have much to say.
Oh, the story's only beginning.
You're right.
What is that song? The rest is still unwritten?
Oh, well, Natasha Bedingfield. That's a banger.
Speaking of songs, have you picked up on the theme yet?
I knew the first one. The second one seems like Emo Blake.
Emo Blake. No, the theme is not Emo Blake. It could always be Emo Blake.
Like, I thought you were giving a song to, like, all of us.
No.
Small things. A-list songs.
Okay, yeah. That's a decent guess, but we'll wait until the next ones until you can see if you can figure it out.
Okay. Well, no segue. A-list. Let's do it.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right. Everybody pull out your maps and circle this. Don Mills Crossing, a 60-acre site near Don Mills Road and Eglinton Avenue West. For those of you listening from Toronto, you probably know exactly where that is.
A joyous place to drive.
A joyous, but if I ever have to drive on Eglinton, I'm not going. Okay? I'll tell you that.
It's a nightmare.
Eglinton is the worst road in the country of Canada and possibly in North America, right? It sucks. But, hey, it won't suck for long because it's going to be the future location of a community hub with new residential, office, and retail buildings. But most importantly, it will be the home of Kyle Lowry Road.
Mm.
The Raptors' historic 2019 championship run will also be recognized with a street called Champions Road. It's pretty, not creative at all, which will serve as a reminder of the events and the rewards of hard work, commitment, and passion. So this will all be in this Don Mills Crossing site. The city stated, "The new street names honor individuals who have lived in the community and made significant contributions through their life's work, and one non-resident who gained Toronto's admiration and respect for his role in bringing a major league championship to the city." There's like a special shout out for Kyle Lowry. It's cool. I don't know if people are over the naming of streets or like Kyle Lowry Day. Like, you know, they always toss that in there when somebody gets a day. But I think that this will be, I think it's a nice thing to honor Kyle Lowry. I'm sure Blake Murphy would be all over this, who's the biggest Kyle Lowry fan in the world. He's going to put up residency on that street, probably.
See if you can buy property there.
In Toronto, cool. You're not buying property anywhere.
Yeah, it might be tough. Although Eglinton, I don't know if anyone wants to be commuting in and out of there every day. But no, that's great. I mean, I'm more excited about the future statue that'll be out there in front of the Scotiabank Arena. But, you know, we'll see if Kyle makes his way down there to Eglinton, fights through the traffic to like do a little banner raising with the city of Toronto.
Okay, there's no way you put him in the car. Okay, it's just that's torture. Got me thinking, what other Toronto athletes need a name road named after them? I'm going to present you with a few.
Okay,
Penny Oleksiak Park
rolls off the tongue.
Andre DeGrasse Avenue.
Feel like there's a better one out there.
I know.
DeGrasse.
Warfar Freeway. Warfar Freeway.
We definitely need another
dynamite.
Freeway.
Yeah.
We definitely need I would be all for
another freeway. Yay! There's a winner.
The naming rights, I don't know, but maybe you could, forget property, you could buy the naming rights and you'd
Warfar Freeway. That'll work for you. I'm cruising down that. Cuthbert Concession.
Concession?
Well, like,
what's a concession?
Oh my God, you don't know what a concession is? You're a city boy. I used to live out in the country. Shout out East Gwillimbury. My girl
Meredith. Like a side road?
My girl Meredith is listening. She knows concessions.
You're giving me a side road and you're getting
a side road for sure. You're the fill-in, buddy.
I'll take the side road.
All right.
I'll take anything I can get.
Matt Sundin Skyway. Oh, that's sexy.
That's nice.
That's good.
The Sundin Skyway is nice.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the winner. Joe Carter Junction.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's pretty good.
All right.
I think you've stumbled upon it.
Okay,
a couple
this
decent
is
ones.
Fun. Okay, text in any Toronto athletes that needed a road named after them and what you would.
I'm surprised you didn't have a Matthews one there because we got to like pander.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm not getting. We don't have to get in the doomsday clock thing that you guys, everybody's been talking about.
Oh,
but if you really want to pander to everything Auston Matthews, roll out the red carpet. I feel like there's something there.
M is tough.
You can fill up the text line with that.
Yes, please. I don't think there's an M.
It's got to be an M.
Oh.
The Magnificent Mile.
Meadow.
Matthews Magnificent Mile.
Meadow. Muse.
Muse.
M-E-W-S. Like, you don't drive much. Motorway.
Yeah.
How about motorway?
That's a little bit more common than Muse.
Cuthbert Cul-de-sac.
That's good.
That's a text line. Ackieburg Avenue. Wow. Good for
I don't know if Berg deserves that distinction, but something for Matthews, the motorway, maybe the motorway. Matthews motorway more important than the 4FR
okay.
freeway,
Whoa,
despite
that's pretty rude.
How well that does roll off the tongue.
This is so good. Can we get a sewer line, the Marshawn Mile?
That's pretty good,
that's
too.
That's good. I love it. The Matthews Parkway. No, I think the motorway is good, guys. Gilmore Grove.
Decent.
All right, keep them coming. I love it. Text line 59590. All right, second thing on the A list. Blast from the past, John Michael Lyles. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He joined the podcast Spit and Chicklets to share some stories from his time as Maple Leaf, playing alongside Phil the Thrill, Phil Kessel. You think you know everything about Phil Kessel? Well, take a listen to this.
Phil was like ready to quit playing hockey when he found out Randy was getting hired because Phil only drinks Coke. He doesn't drink water. And he heard Randy doesn't let Coke in the locker room. And he's like, I'll f-ing quit. I swear to God. I'm like, dude, you just signed a $56 million deal or whatever. And he's just like, don't care. I'll f-ing quit. I don't need this.
So Phil Kessel loves Coca-Cola so much that he was seriously, I mean, obviously there's probably a little bit of exaggeration here, but would have quit hockey because maybe Randy Carlyle wouldn't let them have Coca-Cola in the dressing room. That's how much he loves it. 8-year contract for $64 million. Hey, I don't care. I need my Coca-Cola.
So a lot has been written about Phil Kessel's dietary things,
you know,
and his as it pertains to his Maple Leafs career, and yet the Coca-Cola habit kind of fell through the cracks.
I
like,
know.
How did we not know?
Like, I listened to this and I thought, I've never heard that.
It's sort of unsurprising. Right? I mean, I'm not surprised that Phil is a big Coca-Cola guy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some, you know, nutritional qualities to it. I mean, we've seen Alex Ovechkin for sure. I believe Zdeno Chara guzzling Coke on the bench.
I mean, a little caffeine kick never.
Yeah,
hurts.
A little sugar in a game that's going to a fourth period, a fifth.
I think I would prefer a little G2 Gatorade action.
Is that like the calorie-free one?
I don't know.
You need the calories at that point. That's why the Coke is important. Sugar,
just a
little
good,
energy
give me a
in the
good
moment.
Old Gatorade.
A good old Gatorade's fine.
All right. I don't know if you're that. If I don't think there's anything in the world I'd be willing to put as a non-negotiable like that. Like, I need this thing or I will not play. Or I will not show up to work.
It seems like a bit of an overreaction. I'm sure he could just, like, you know, have a six-pack of cola waiting in the car for him on his way out of the arena.
It's too late.
Is it too late? He needs
it
in the moment.
He wants it in the locker room or he's bouncing.
Did we get, like, a resolution? Like, did they work it out?
I don't know. That was
Phil allowed to?
The end of the conversation.
That was the end of the conversation.
It's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. We'll have to wait for his second appearance on the podcast to finish the story.
I love it. Okay, here's a little petty story. It kind of slipped through the cracks because it was before Wednesday's NBA Finals game. But the Warriors were warming up. Things got a little weird. They had to stop their warm-up because, well, the game was at Boston. And, you know, Boston fans are one thing, a whole conversation of its own. But they had to pause warm-ups because the net, their end of the court.
This was for game 3?
Yes, seemed a little bit off. And the players were like, this is different. Something's going on. They somehow, and I don't know if it was on purpose, but probably, the net was a few inches off, too high. So you're shooting the ball, and, well, this isn't going in. Why do I feel so off? Well, because the net, just a coincidence on the road, was multiple inches off. Huge difference, I think, as a non-basketball star, to shoot on a basket that's like 10 feet tall and one that's like 10 foot three, especially when you're warming up for a massive NBA Finals game. They got it fixed, but they had to stop their warm up. They had to have this little moment where there's a ladder brought out to measure the net properly. I think there's a little bit of foul play at hand there.
Yeah, that smells bad. But at the same time, like, if this was a conspiracy, impossible to get away with for a couple reasons.
Well, the players, like, probably knew the second they shot
one ball. Some of the greatest shooters on the planet are on this Golden State Warriors team. Of course they would know if the regulations were off, even fractionally. And of course, a couple inches is pretty severe. But you would have to get someone out there to fix it before the game started, because the Celtics would be shooting on that when the game started. So, like, you would be messing with them even more, because
maybe they had spent time practicing on a 10-foot three net.
Now, the Boston Celtics are a pretty impressive team, but if they can adjust to a couple inches of net size, length, whatever it is,
I love it.
That would be even more impressive than what they're doing. But I don't... Maybe there was some foul play here. Maybe they could have got away with, like, fixing it very quickly before the start of the game. But to suggest they'd get away with this is, you know, we've seen Boston. We've seen, like, what, Deflategate? Like, there's always controversy around that market.
I don't trust Boston.
Yeah. But tough to get away with that one.
It reminded me of, and this was during the NHL playoffs, where the Oilers played the Kings. And there's a story that came out that the lights at Crypto.com Arena in LA didn't turn them on for the Oilers for their morning skate.
Wasn't like one of the,
they didn't have the nets out or something.
Yeah. I think the not the equipment guys, the rink staff was holding on to the net, and they were out there shooting pucks. Like, they refused to take their hand. It's like we've seen in, I don't know, NBA. Yeah. In the NBA games, we've seen protesters come out and, like, glue their hands to the floor, chain themselves to the net. They had the rink staff in LA refusing to let go of the nets because they wouldn't give in a couple extra minutes of the Oilers practice.
Their excuse was that the practice didn't start till 11:30, but they got there early. I just, you know, the ice is ready. There's not like a tight select game in the morning at Crypto.com Arena.
No.
Like,
I guess you have specified time, but, like, if you're hosting an NHL game on the night, like, you have just access to that rink when you need it, right?
You want to,
especially
go there
if you're
early?
The home team. As the road team,
healthy
you need your
scratches are probably out there doing some shuttles.
Yeah, you need. That's Mickey Mouse. Let's be honest.
It is Mickey Mouse. Apparently, they skated for like 15 minutes before they turned the lights on. Carry me home.
There you go.
That was. Here,
no Oxford. Closer to figuring out exactly what the theme is, but good tie.
Okay, so a couple more in the text line here with the naming. Darcy Tucker Trail. That's a tough one because it's the two T's, but I grew up as a Darcy Tucker fan. Mm-hmm. I would be putting my real estate purchase on Darcy Tucker Trail.
The Tucker Trail sounds like a place where a lot of dogs would go.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I think... every other dog
is named Tucker.
Is named Tucker, so
I know
perfect.
Like four Tuckers, and
there's
they're all golden retrievers. Yeah,
there's Tucker is the most common dog name for sure, and I think it's because of Darcy Tucker, maybe the best compliment you could pay him because everybody loves dogs.
Donovan Bailey Bridge.
Okay. Bailey Bridge.
Austin Alleyway. I don't really like that one. DeMar DeRozan Drive. That's good.
Why doesn't DeMar get anything?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he wasn't around for the championship.
Well, I don't know. He's a legend. Yeah. What else? Oh, yeah. My girl Meredith from EG says she does know concessions. See? Gary Lehman Grove. Cujo Court. I like that one. There's so many good ones. You guys are smart and creative. Jose Bautista Boulevard.
Yeah.
God. Austin Matthews Market. Guy in there. We're falling off the Matthews ones, okay? Pick it up, people. Always text us in 590-590 on the text line. It's Friday. Vibes are high. We got Cuthbert in the seat here. As I said, we're going to talk to our buddy Ben Ennis after the break. We got Frank Saravelli at 7:30. Get more into those trade targets. And then legend Grant Hill at 8 o'clock before the Wake and Rake. We're going to take a break, and we will speak with Ben Ennis. We'll do a little Jays, do a little Canada soccer, do a little Canadian Open. It's the Canada show here this morning. That's next on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.